The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox continue to make waves as we make our way simultaneously through the World Baseball Classic and spring training as a country and a team, respectively. Just today, right before we went live, news broke that the Red Sox are adding an additional free agent to the roster. Danny Coulombe, whose name I've been pronouncing incorrectly really his entire career, has been added to the roster, nicknamed Frenchie, which I guess is kind of the giveaway. Just a solid lefty arm from the looks of it. We don't have a number as of right now when we're recording this. We just know it's a one-year major league deal. But just at the surface level, I mean, this is a nice pickup. He's going to step right into that pen alongside lefties like Chapman and Moran. Probably allows us to keep Early and Toley down in AAA so they can develop as starters rather than necessitating another lefty in the pen. And we'll sort of see what happens with Sandoval's fate. What's your guys' knee-jerk reaction to this move?
Yeah, well, I think one of the big question marks was the, you know, the middle relief kind of in between the starters and Chapman. And, you know, a big lefty arm is, you know, I think it fills a big hole that we needed in the bullpen. You know, bullpen arms, we're never going to say no, right? I think you just, the way the league is now, it's kind of just depth. In the bullpen is really what you need, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, bullpen is definitely was a need going into this season, and even watching spring training, it's definitely a need. He looks like he pitched 43 innings, had about a strikeout per inning with 43 strikeouts, and I think it was a 2.30 ERA. So I mean, he's a little bit on the older side, but it's only a 1 year deal. So I mean, I'll welcome it at this point.
Yeah, it's really one of those things, nothing but upside. If you have a little bit of cash to spend, may as well spend it on the bullpen. That's typically a pretty nice place to just throw a couple million dollars, get a guy in there, and see what happens, because the downside ultimately is going to be pretty limited. 36, but I mean, you know, a quick glance at the savant, at the baseball reference, the guy pops out. And, he's kind of like one of those relievers. You've always heard his name. You know, he's been pretty consistently in the league, whether it's on this team or that one, played a lot in Oakland and Minnesota. And most recently, I think he was traded midseason last year. So we'll see what this guy has for us. But it goes to show that the offseason isn't really ever done until it's done. You know, it's funny how we're deep into spring training at this point and suddenly a new name pops up, which is really nice because I feel like the Sox kind of neglected the bullpen all offseason, right? We heard about starters. We heard about batters. No one really talked that much about relief pitching. And so suddenly we get a pretty solid looking guy here. And, you know, hopefully he's going to perform for the Red Sox. You know, talking about the lefties, though, that is kind of a smooth transition into the main meat of tonight's episode, I think, which is all of the hullabaloo around Marcelo Meyer. Right. A lot of news is coming out. Obviously, we've been hearing about Cora's quotes about how we weren't sure what this dude's role was going to be on opening day. Suddenly, sort of the third baseman was being a competition. And now we've heard that Durbin is going to be a lock for that, seemingly. I mean, he's been playing pretty well over there and Cora seems to like him. And so suddenly Meyer, who was supposed to be the shortstop of the future, then became the third baseman of the now, and now is sort of getting kicked off of that position. And now it's even kind of sounding like maybe there's not room for him at all on the major league roster. And it is worth noting, of course, something just published today, right, is this rumor, right, this maybe not a rumor, but this noise that Meyer has not been approached for a long-term deal by the Red Sox. This is something we've known for a little while, or at least speculated on. And now Chris Cotillo is putting out the news. And I mean, it's not a surprise to me necessarily, given the guy's injury history, but it also makes me really curious, what is Meyer's role in the club going to look like going forward? What do you guys think about this?
It's just huge question marks. I want to be a big Meyer fan. I guess it's hard to say I am, because it's, you know, we've barely seen him, but I want to be, and I really want him to be in the lineup and, you know, be a guy of this young core and all this stuff that's coming out, all the spring training stuff. It's just hard to keep to think that's going to happen at this point. No one seems to be a fan of him in the office or coaching. You know, obviously, him and Roman are tight, which might save him, right? To make our star stud player, you know, happy. But I think he has a big bat, you know, and I think his bat potential is very high. And I think, you know, he's at the age where we're going to see players get better. Well, you hope, right? So you hope to see him come in and getting better. It doesn't seem like Cora really thinks he is at this point. But, you know, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him start in Worcester. You know, it would be disheartening at this point, I think, this late. You know, like you say, 4 years right now is, you know, so, you know, you don't want to see him start in Worcester. You know, it's just a bad sign off the bat. I don't think he would be happy about it. You know, but I would, you know, if in a perfect world, obviously he's our second baseman and, you know, he's mashing the ball, and that doesn't seem to be the case. That it's hard to imagine that right now, but, you know, I'll still leave out a little hope that he'll figure it out at some point. You know, he's still very, very young, but he needs to start figuring it out now.
Before I even get to my take, I mean, how the mighty have fallen with the Boston Red Sox when it comes to prospects and what we thought were going to be cornerstones for this franchise. I mean, it was only 2 years ago we thought we had four of them, right? Marcelo Meyer at that point was kind of on the precipice of being overtaken by Roman Anthony, but you had both of them, Kyle Teal, and then all of a sudden this Christian Campbell kid. And we're like, wow, we're going to be set. Fast forward to 2026, we're all just hoping that Roman Anthony doesn't get hurt. And that's like the main hope, because Kyle Teal's not here. Fan base is out on Campbell. Half doesn't know what to expect. And then you have Marcelo Meyer. And it's interesting, Nick, because you said that the front office, you know, they were never in on him. But I think there was a part of us, and even our podcast, where we were like, oh, this must have something to do with the fact that he's not signing an extension, that there must be some sort of deals going on and he's just rejecting it. He's going to bet on himself, pull a Tristan Casas move, which didn't work out for Tristan. And they're just punishing him. But then it comes out from Cotillo today that they haven't even approached him, which just, it's mind-numbingly, like, I don't even know how to explain it. Frustrating that we haven't even approached him. We're going to possibly put him in Worcester. And he was not attached to any trades. Like, he was quote-unquote untouchable in a Ketel Marte trade, at least based on reports. But yet you have no faith in even offering him a contract long term, and you don't even want to start him. Now, I don't know, maybe Christian Campbell has spooked the front office, and there's things they see with Marcelo Meyer, whether it be his injury history or the fact that, you know what, I agree with you, Doug, like long term, maybe his bat projects well, but, you know, he did not have a great MLB debut as far as with the bat, but defensively was electric, which was almost the exact opposite of Christian Campbell, because he came up and his bat was on fire and he couldn't field a ground ball at second base to save life, especially in a pressure cooking situation. So I don't know what this means, but what it means to me is that the Red Sox just don't know what the hell they're doing. And I don't mean that like they don't know what they're doing as a franchise and like they're not going to be good. I don't have high hopes for the season that much unless all goes well. But it just speaks to, like, just make a damn decision. Like, either you're in on the kid, offer him a contract, or at least have him start, or have a developmental plan and just announce it. Like, you're going to put him in Worcester, and this is the plan. Or trade him. And they don't know what they want to do. And it seems like every day is just a yo-yo with the Boston Red Sox. Insert a name or a player.
Yeah, I think you raise a lot of good points. You know, it is interesting with Meyer how we promoted him. We chose to promote this kid, you know, 22 years old at the time. And clearly the Red Sox must have thought last year they saw something in him down in the minors that said to them, this kid is ready. This guy is ready for the majors, at least a test. And presumably, based off of what we're hearing, he apparently failed that test without a lot of us at home even knowing it. You know, something is going on. They're seeing something, whether it's in the clubhouse, which I won't speculate on, whether it's in the practice, in the batting cages, or even just on the field in spring training, that is somehow inching him further off the roster. You know, it was projected that he would probably be a platoon this year. FanGraphs was guessing it would be a Meyer Monasterio platoon at second base. Monasterio, one of those guys we traded for, and, you know, alongside Durbin. And, you know, that made sense. You know, I figured, okay, fine. If you say that Meyer can't hit lefties, then he's 23. Obviously, lefties have issues with that sometimes. Jaron Duran has issues with it. Masataka Yoshida has issues with it, certainly. Roman Anthony really is like the only lefty on the roster that is fine, you know, when it comes to that sort of thing. So, okay, we'll platoon him. But now suddenly it's sounding like there's a lot of a lack of faith in his ability to hit righties as well. And that's just so strange to me because ultimately the guy is 23 years old. There's a lot of time left for development. There's a lot of time for him to figure this stuff out. But it's so weird how, just from a fan's perspective, we saw the defense. We saw some decent flashes at the plate. And, you know, we obviously were all like, oh, yeah, this dude's at least ready to start half the games next year, you know. And apparently Alex Cora and the front office have absolutely no faith in that. This dude has gone from the shortstop of tomorrow to, you know, a placeholder, really, a backup to Trevor Story, and presumably a placeholder until Arias is ready to be the real shortstop of the future. It's very, very odd. And, you know, before I pass it back to you guys, it is interesting how you mentioned the big four of the Red Sox prospects, this Mount Rushmore that was supposed to come in like the Four Horsemen and sweep in a new era of Red Sox baseball. And, you know, you have Roman Anthony leading the charge for sure, but, you know, you have Christian Campbell and Marcelo Meyer, both young, but with a lot of question marks now, and Kyle Teal on another team who has become the best Italian catcher since Hadrian. It's just unbelievable, you know, and very disappointing to suddenly be counting on a development boost for Meyer and Campbell to hopefully join Anthony's ranks.
Yeah, right. Kyle Teal hitting bombs for Italy. Yeah, it's just it's disappointing, you know, to see where they are. And, you know, I mean, I think even when we were like, oh, we have four right now, I think a lot of people like, you're not going to go 4-for-4 with them, you know, so let's see what you can squeak out of it. And they should, but they should be getting more out of it as, than they are, right? Obviously, Roman's a stud, but they need to be getting something out of, they need to get at least two. Right, they need to hit on at least two of these guys, and so far they've only hit on one. And you know, they traded the other for Garrett Crochet, so you know it's good, right? But the ones they kept that they put faith in, they need to really produce, and they need to start producing. You know, we can say, and I agree that you know they're young, they have time to develop, but you need to show that you're developing, right? You know, that develop needs it. You don't need to be, you know, an all-star this year, right? But you at least need to show the development is starting. And the worry probably seems that it's not, right? And that's very worrisome. And, you know, I thought Meyer would definitely be on the roster before Campbell, and now I don't know. You know, probably neither of them, but, you know, I don't know. I think Meyer's still might make the team, but you know, it's who knows at this point with Cora and him, anything's up in the air. I think it's hard to even predict what Cora's thinking with him at this point.
Ridgewood, New Jersey native Kyle Teal. I love how we're still talking about him and Team Italy. I before I even get into more of Marcelo Meyer, I just want to say, nothing could be more annoying than this whole World Baseball Classic and the fact that 2/3 of every player that is playing this competition could be potentially playing for Team USA if you just went by their birth country. But I digress. Although I can't even say anything because USA couldn't beat Italy with all the people that couldn't make Team USA. So congratulations to Team Italy. But as far as Marcelo Meyer, you know, I see a comment here in the chat, and this is interesting because it looks like what this person's claiming is that Cora mentioned, he's not consistently executing on what they're instructing him on. Now, I don't necessarily know what that means, whether that's like, I'm going to imagine it's maybe in the batter's box. And if that's the case, then I could understand the frustration because, I mean, as much as I would like to think that his bat projects as really good, it didn't look great. It was very inconsistent. Yeah, he showed flashes of where he could be a doubles machine. I don't necessarily know if I saw tons of power, but a competent hitter nonetheless. And then I saw moments where he looked lost, right? And if he's not following what the instructions are in the batting box and he's subpar at best right now with his bat, like I could get why they're not willing to risk, you know, putting him at second base and having him play a full season. Because you know what? Like this team is already void of enough talent compared to some major league rosters, and it's definitely power deprived. And if the one thing he was showing was power, maybe you risk it. But I don't know. It's absolutely frustrating though, because I really thought the only thing we were ever going to have to worry about this kid was injuries, and that he was going to come up and he was going to be shortstop of the future. And you just prayed to God, please don't get hurt. And, you know, thus far since he came up to the MLB, he did get hurt. He ended up returning at the end of the season, but I mean, to think this kid must, you know, might be in Worcester to start off, which should be, like Doug said, like taking that next step. And I don't even know if development is the right word, like just looking for progression, which is just another word for development, I guess, it's disheartening to say the least.
It is, you know, it's funny because I remember my impression of Meyer when I finally got to see him at the major league level. And, you know, the one word that came to my mind instantly was composed. You know, this was a guy who seemed to have a really good head on his shoulders and didn't seem all that affected by certain things that were happening in the batter's box or on the field. A sharp grounder is hit his way. He smothers it. Good arm, good instincts, good speed. You know, when it came to his offensive struggles, I felt like he took it in stride. I saw him make a few adjustments from day to day, a ball that he almost got one day, he would get the next. And, you know, I thought that that was a good sign. Obviously, it was a microcosm of a greater season, but I did think that it, you know, indicated that this is a dude where ultimately this is a sport where the brain can get in your way more than the body sometimes. We see that with guys all the time. So without that being an issue, I thought this guy is kind of going to be a lock going forward to at least be an average everyday big leaguer, especially with the defense providing a solid floor. So to hear that maybe he's not taking to instruction, I would love to know what the heck that means. You know, what do they see about his approach at the plate that this 23-year-old can't seem to fix? You know, he's not a huge strikeout machine. We have guys on the roster who strike out more than him. He doesn't refuse to take a walk. We have guys on the roster who are far, you know, less walking, pro-walking than Meyer is, certainly. You know, it's just weird. It's really weird. And, you know, I say that I'm fine with not signing this guy to a long-term extension, specifically because of the health. That was always what was in my mind. But suddenly I'm starting to not just say, okay, well, we'll just ride this guy for 4 or 5 years, see what happens. And suddenly I start to think, well, why didn't we trade him? You know, because we heard that this guy was untouchable, as you mentioned, Chris. You know, the Ketel Marte trade made it sound like all the noise that came out of that at the very end, it made it sound like the big issue that the two clubs could not see eye to eye on was Marcelo Meyer being included. The Red Sox were offering Arias, from what we heard, and instead the Diamondbacks preferred Meyer. Obviously, the club not necessarily having faith in Meyer doesn't speak to confidence in Arias, of course. He's still very young and several years out. But it is a really interesting note because I'm just curious. Like, I mean, we were obviously willing to trade Kyle Teal with no backup plan for a guy like Crochet, which is fair. You sort of make a backup plan, which is Narvaez, who's worked out fine and should at least be decent next year, presumably, based off what we saw. It's just odd that we wouldn't do that for a player like Ketel Marte, who was 32, granted, but is also one of, if not the best second baseman in baseball, and was kind of exactly what this lineup seemed to need. Very odd.
Yeah, it is odd. And going back to what you said, when Marcelo hit that bomb in New York, I was like, yeah, lock. This kid's nasty. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm ready for this. Like, he'll be the next year. He'll be a guy. You know, that's all it took. This is one home run in Yankee Stadium for me to be like, oh, yeah. You know, and then it just didn't happen. And, you know, that's why I feel like it's there, because you're right. Like, he had composure. It didn't feel like he felt like that, you know, it was too big for him playing at Yankee Stadium. And, you know, that was what was great about him and Roman, was they both hit home runs. They both looked poised and ready for their moments, and Roman kept going and stepped up, and you know, Marcelo did not, and you know, he still has the chance to, and I would still like to see him start with the team and just give him the opportunity before, you know, you really make a decision on him.
Yeah, the only thing that I could really think of with Marcelo Meyer that I can remember from last season, and one of the biggest differences between him and Roman Anthony, is I don't know if I would say that he wasn't patient, but there was an inconsistency in his at-bats from even a game-to-game measure. And what I mean is that, like, Roman Anthony would have bad games where he'd be swinging at pitches. He was always patient, even from the beginning. But, like, he very rarely was getting beat by the same pitch on a night in and night out basis. He may have been striking out, but like, you weren't going to beat him the same way every night in the same series. Whereas Marcelo Meyer, like, he would swing at a certain pitch and then like not get beat by it. And then like 2 days later, get beat by the same thing, be patient at one at bat with, you know, similar pitches, and then have a pitcher pitching very similarly, same arsenal pitches, and then not be patient. So maybe there was just inconsistencies in his at-bats, really. And I mean, it would speak to exactly what George said, because, I mean, if they're instructing him to be more patient in certain situations against pitchers, against certain pitches, especially looking at his strike zone and, like, whiff rate and, like, his chase percentages, if he's not listening, like, I get it. Doesn't necessarily make me happy, because as sad as it sounds, even if he's reluctant, I still think he's our best option at this point, because realistically – if he's not playing second, like, we're having IKF play a good chunk at second base for the Boston Red Sox in 2026. And I don't necessarily know how I feel about that. Not too confident.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the IKF signing, I've spoken a little bit about it previously. And it was one of those things that I thought was almost a premature move on the Red Sox part. Like, you know, we weren't quite sure about who we were going to trade for. Caleb Durbin didn't quite manifest until a few days later, right? And so I thought, oh, well, maybe IKF was just the backup plan. And that's a lot of money to spend on a backup plan. But now, seemingly, you're right. He is the backup plan, not for third base, but for second base, you know, which is very disheartening. I like the guy's defense, obviously. Every team does. That's why he's still in the league and still so sought after and can command a paycheck worth several million dollars. But, you know, the bat's just not there versus either side, in my opinion. I'm not really sold on the guy. You know, we're seeing a lot of speculation. You know, what's so interesting is every time you have something like this happen, especially in spring training, right, you end up getting so much noise, so many people who overreact, and you see a million comments suddenly about how Alex Cora has a personal vendetta against Marcelo Meyer. He hates the kid and whatnot. And it's so funny because, like, normally I'm the type to wave my hand at that, to sort of, you know, roll my eyes pretty much. But it's hard to argue against that narrative. The Red Sox aren't doing anything to dispel that, because you do hear about how Cora is speaking in spring training about everyone else, it seems. And he's positive and he's seeing all this and he's being very hard on Meyer. And I don't know if it's sort of a carrot and stick approach. I don't know if maybe Meyer, he feels, is the type of guy who's motivated by that type of speech. Some guys need a softer hand. Some guys need a firmer hand. I don't know if that's the mindset at all, but it is so funny how, like, this is the one time that we're getting really that type of rhetoric of, oh, this coach hates this player, and I cannot immediately dismiss it. And I'm almost kind of on board, like, yeah, maybe he does. I don't know.
Yeah, like at this point, maybe he does, you know, but I, you know, you hope that's not the case, but at this point, it seems like, you know, he might not. And Cora's a guy that seems like he might be the type of guy that does hate people and does, you know, not like these younger kids. And I can see that, you know, I can see him having a vendetta. I can see the front office maybe having a vendetta of him not signing, you know, that's been floated out there. So, you know, there's something going on for them not to be totally backing him, you know, because it's not just like, if it's just he's great in the locker room, he's great at everything, and he's kind of not just playing that good, you would think they'd want to get behind him and kind of, you know, give him some encouragement and stuff. But it doesn't seem like that's what they're doing.
Yeah, so I just went into both their savants, or Roman Anthony and Marcel Marx. I started thinking about what the heck I was saying as far as last year. And at face value, when you look at the whiff and K rate, as far as percentage, like, it's marginal, a couple of percent difference. I think the real standouts for me is that when I see chase rate, Marcelo Meyer has a almost 10% higher chase rate in comparison to Roman Anthony. Hard hit is about 10% difference. Barrel percentage is about 6% difference. So when you're looking at just those particular stats and what the Boston Red Sox have been trying to accomplish the last couple of years as far as their hitting strategy, it totally makes sense now why Marcelo Meyer might be the odd man out. Because just looking at those categories, which has been a huge focus as far as, for, you know, from the hitting staff and coaches to the Boston Red Sox, I don't know. Like, if he's reluctant to want to make the adjustments to fix those things, then yeah, he is going to be the odd man out. Because if you look at some of the savant charts for some of these backups, like, they're not great players, but they have a higher level of consistency in those areas that you would think that maybe you'd get a better result over the course of 162 games.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, something that just made me laugh, one commenter compared it to the situation in which Quentin Tarantino seemed to have that bizarre grudge for Paul Dano. You know, he came out with all these comments for no reason. I mean, it was, you know, it is funny.
Good call.
That's a really funny comparison to make. And, you know, the same commenter also agrees that maybe, and hopefully, it's a motivational technique. I think that's what we're all hoping for, right? Is that this isn't a real appraisal or doesn't necessarily shine light on Meyer's ability or inability, as it might be. But it's just concerning. You know, it's odd because we suddenly start to look again at the roster and how it's constructed, right? And all of these weird little things, like, if it's not Meyer, then who is it? Is IKF really going to be the starting second baseman? Romy is going to the IL. He's not an option. And even if he were, there was still questions about, could he hit righties? You know, you obviously have Monasterio, who's good versus lefties, but you really want that everyday guy, or at least that two-thirds guy at second base. And I'm not sure who the Red Sox now think it's going to be. It's very odd. Obviously, Caleb Durbin can play third base or second base, but you don't want to move him around too much. And it seems like the Sox really like him at third base. Just based off of spring training, what I've seen, so do I. You start to look at the roster, you know. Obviously, the nightmare situation for me is Sedan Rafael at second base. That is not something I'm interested in seeing at all, especially because suddenly, if you do that move, you're pretty much having an all-lefty outfield DH, right? You have that Roman Anthony, Duran, Abreu, Yoshida configuration, and there's only one Nate Eaton, you know? There's only one of him. Nate Eaton, who hit that great, right, home run off of Skubal, had that great three-hit game in the WBC, British legend Nate Eaton, again, right? But, you know, Eaton was a guy who last year in the minor leagues had a 928 OPS in 125 plate appearances versus lefties. Obviously, we've heard the Sox speak very highly of him this spring training and in even off season talking about his ability. So I do imagine he'll be a part of the configuration, but in order to do so, you need to justify Duran not playing or Yoshida being here at all. You know, every roster spot is valuable. And as much as we've referred to the Sox as a platoon dynasty, there's only one projected platoon right now on the roster, and I'm almost begging for another one.
Yeah, Eaton's a player that every team would like to have, you know, but he's not a starter, right? He's a great utility bench player that will always help any team that he's on, right? He can kind of do it. You know, he's like a five-tool player that's just not that good at it. You know what I mean? But, like, he can do it all. Like, he's just not that good at them all. But, you know, he can get in there, whatever position you need. You know, he can get you a hit. He can get you a stolen base. You know, but you're right. It's he's not, you know, that's not the answer. But you're right. There's the answer at second base is kind of – he's the only – Meyer, it needs to be Meyer, right? And if they're really – choosing to start IKF over Meyer, you know, that's probably a problem. It's probably not a good sign. And but I don't think anyone wants to see Rafaela at second. You know, maybe a couple times during the year if they have to, okay. But no one wants to see that. I mean, could it possibly be the best offensive lineup we could put out if we could have all of them playing? Maybe, but, you know, we have the best – he's the best center fielder in the league, right? You want him out there. You need him out there. And you're right. With the lefties, it's just a whole across the board now. It just brings a lot more balance. And Durbin, I like Durbin. No, Durbin could end up being a really good piece for us this year. But Meyer it just keeps coming back to Meyer needing to be, we just need him to be the answer there. And I think the whole fan base wants him, and that's why it's so glaring that Cora doesn't want him. Even if he's really not being that subtle, but even if he was being subtle, we would still be picking it up because it's not praise, and that's really what we're looking for here.
Yeah, I mean, what would be absolutely ideal in another universe it would be is you'd have Meyer and Campbell fighting for second base, and then the other one ending up in Worcester until Story's not on the team. And then, you know, ideally you would have obviously Meyer at shortstop, Campbell's your second baseman.
Yeah.
We have three of our four prospects, but it's not the case. Some of the wild things, like if you go on the Boston Red Sox website, you look at the depth chart just for the infield. I'm going to read it off to you guys. So you got Narvaez, obviously he's catcher, first base Contreras, we expected. Second base is still Marcelo Meyer. So apparently the people who run the website for the team don't realize that Alex Cora hates him. Third base, Caleb Durbin. Shortstop, Trevor Story. And then the outfield's even wilder. So left field, Jaron Duran. Center field, Saidan Rafaela. Right field is Willier Abreu. And our designated hitter is Roman Anthony. This is according to the Boston Red Sox website. And then if you just Google, we've got Roman Anthony at left field, Trevor Story at shortstop, Jaron Duran is the DH. Wilson Contreras is playing first base. Willier Abreu is still at right field. Caleb Durbin, third base. Saidan Rafaela, center field. Marcelo Meyer, still second base. Carlos Narvaez, catcher. And designated hitter, Masataka Yoshida. So, I don't know what we're going to get. Neither does apparently Google or the Boston Red Sox website. But nonetheless, man, it's not great options when you realistically look at what the platoons could be. I still love my guy, Nick Sogard. I'm going to ride and die with him. Nate Eaton is a close second, but I mean, what is nice is that we do have options if people get hurt. It's sad that Romy Gonzalez doesn't look like he's going to be a part of this platoon in the beginning in the infield due to injury. Hopefully he gets better. But again, the question marks that we have at second base should not be the question marks that we have.
Yeah. Really well said. You know, while we've been speaking, a couple other new pieces of information have sort of broken out. First off, on the Danny Colom signing, it was only a one-year, $1 million deal, which is potentially amazing value for a guy who ultimately should be a pretty solid lefty option in the pen. Really nice to get a guy, especially on the older side, just for a buck. I mean, that's nothing, you know. In order to make room for him on the 40-man, we have put Romy Gonzalez, unfortunately, onto the 60-day. However, per sources, and I saw Cotillo tweet this out, per sources, initial indications on Romy Gonzalez are that he will need some sort of cleanup procedure, but not a major surgery that would threaten his season. That's what Cotillo says. And so that's a really good sign. Hopefully that means he should be an option down the line. But of course, you know, that's presumably a second baseman versus lefties. I wasn't too convinced of them versus righties last year. So we still need the other half to that duo. And yeah, maybe it will be Nick Sogard. You know, maybe it will be even a surprising guy like Siegler or something like that. We certainly do have depth at this point. It just, again, kind of feels like that sort of roster where you kind of want just one more trade. One more trade could really set us up. And I don't know if we're going to get it before the season starts. I don't even know if we're going to get it before the deadline. I'm not making any more bold claims about whether Jaron Duran will be here in a year. I don't know anymore. You know, the Red Sox have certainly proven to be, if nothing else, surprising.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good word for it, I think, actually. Yeah. A mind-boggling. So just, you know, it's, they could go any way at any time. And it's all surprising. None of it's surprising. It's just, it's kind of a circus right now, but it's still, you know, putting out a good team. But it does seem like a lot of times, you know, they'll make a good signing here and then not know what they're doing there. And it's kind of 50-50. I feel like it's a coin flip with them at this point with every move they make.
I'll leave it off with this. I think that the thing with the Red Sox is there is every day that goes by becomes evidently more clear. There is low margin for error with this team. We look at a team like last year, which had a hell of a lot more power potential than this team going into 2026. And all it took was one injury and one trade to completely derail an offense. And I mean, have other teams just look at us like we really weren't a threat. I mean, when you were in that Yankee series, we weren't a threat to go yard. And, like, not for nothing, we all complain all season long, oh, well, the Yankees hit a million home runs. They play in a beach box. Well, we had the same opportunity to play in that same sandbox and hit some balls out of the yard in a three-game series, all played in the Bronx. And we didn't. I know that there was that story one where we hit it to the warning tracks. We all thought it was a 3-1 home run, and we were taking that series in two games. It wasn't. We went down in three. And this team is already going into the season at about 60% of that team's power potential. And if we lose, I mean, anyone, looking at what we have as far as platoon dynasty at any position, we are screwed when it comes to the offense potential. Yes, we could maybe manufacture runs against bad teams by getting creative around the base paths and playing small ball. When it comes to the American League East and the American League playoffs, like at some point you got to score runs and it's going to have to come in big moments via the long ball. And I just don't know if this team has it in them. And with all this news, it's not getting any easier.
No, I think my closing thoughts are pretty much that this team is kind of bizarre in a lot of ways. You know, I would say almost in terms of the depth that we've added this offseason through trades and free agents, we're built to survive injuries more than we're built to survive underperformance. You know, I think underperformance would actually be the worst case scenario where suddenly a guy who we're counting on, you know, doesn't even just go down. What happens if he's struggling to hit the ball? What happens if the defense is awful? What happens if Trevor Story takes a huge step back? Or Sidon Rafaela? Or Brian Bayo? You're kind of stuck with those guys on the roster. And the guys that you have waiting in the wings, I mean, you would then need to kind of overcompensate, right? And suddenly, you know, you're not counting on these guys to just fill in the gaps. You're counting on them to step up to the plate as a star. And then obviously the horrible nightmare of dead money, you know, comes in. You know, you've heard in the NFL, some teams run like a 4-3 defense, some teams run a 3-4. I think the Red Sox are about to run the first ever 3-4 baseball defense with three infielders and four outfielders, because the alternative, I'm really not sure. I think that's where I'll end it. What about you guys? Any closing thoughts?
They're actually running an 8-8 because they've got eight infielders that could potentially play on this team this year, and like what seems like eight outfielders. That's my closing thought.
The spider web defense.
Yeah.
You know, it's with all this going on, I'm still, you know, looking forward to watching them be, I still think, a good team. So, you know, but, you know, like you said, it's counting on people to do things. Right. And if they do those things, then I think we can still have a good year with all this craziness, but it's on thin ice.
Yeah. Well said. Opening day is March the 26th, as far as I'm aware, assuming what I have written down is correct. We're creeping closer. You know, we are getting close to the end of the WBC. Still have a lot of Red Sox players in it, which is very exciting. We'll see. Whether Team America or Team Italian America ends up maybe doing better, we'll definitely see about that. But should be a pretty fun ride. And just hopefully, once we reach opening day, the Red Sox will have a little bit of momentum, a little bit of identity, and hopefully we'll be ready to go out there and win some games. Thank you, everyone, for listening in, for watching live, commenting. We do appreciate it. I've been Nick the Voice, joined by Doug Aitchison and Chris Filico, the 2025 Bastard of the Year, and we have been the Bastards of Boston. Take care, everyone. Bye.